In a minute, we're going to hear from John Kilburn, who's Associate Dean of Research at Texas A&M International University in Laredo, Texas, which is right across the border from Nuevo Laredo in Mexico. They're going to tell us about their efforts there with second language and other language provision of services. So maybe I can introduce again John Kilburn. We don't see him right now, but do we have audio with John?
You have me?
Yes, John. I can hear you.
Yes.
Hi, it's Andre.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a video delay, but it's good to see you. I wish you could see me. Like I said, I'm really good looking right now.
Okay. John, we'll take your word for it. Let me just say a couple of words about your presentation here, which is entitled Crossing for Healthcare Services. I'm assuming here that you're going to talk about crossing borders, and I want to emphasize that crossing, I see your title as polysemic, if you will allow me the jargony term, in the sense that you can cross borders for healthcare, but you also have to cross language barriers. In our sense, you have to cross sometimes social barriers. There are all kinds of crossings that are possible and sometimes necessary for healthcare services, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, thank you. You know me well, and that's what was intended.
All right, so go right ahead.
I have 8 minutes to talk about crossing for healthcare services. I'm John Kilburn. With me is Ms. Gabriela Leon, very talented graduate student, the brilliant Dr. Fernando Quintana, Dr. Marcos Yanelis, and Maria Romero Ramirez also helped with this project. Now, part of the drive behind this is a quote by a Republican presidential candidate, the U.S. president, saying that I'm in this race because I care about Americans. I'm not concerned about the very poor because we have a safety net there. If it needs repair, I'll fix it. I'm not concerned about the very rich. They're doing just fine. I'm concerned about the very heart of America, 95% of Americans who are struggling right now. Well, right now I'm presenting from Laredo, Texas, down on the U.S.-Mexico border, and I'm going to talk about a study that we did asking residents about crossing the border from the United States to Mexico to receive health care services. So what does this statement that Romney said have to do with health care? Well, I'm going to tell you, about 38% of the residents of this region cross over for health care services. And they do it for various reasons. Many of them face issues like cartel violence and potential public safety concerns. So we're going to talk about why people cross. First of all, accessibility. It's easier to see a doctor in Mexico to a large extent, the ability to gain entry into the system. It's certainly more affordable. Sometimes it's as much as 10% of the cost. Availability is another major part of the issue. Waiting, getting an appointment. But most of all, the issue that we're most concerned about is familiarity. Are they at ease with the care providers, trusting them, and really speaking one's language? I noticed many of the papers earlier in this session today talked about really knowing the language, not just speaking Spanish, but knowing the cultural nuances and the feeling of familiarity and comfort that really is the care part of health care. So let's talk about the demographics of Laredo, a population of about 225,000, relatively young in terms of median resident age, estimated household income is lower than the United States average. Per capita income, same thing. 96.8% Hispanic here in Webb County in our population. That is certainly not a diverse sample, but it's one of the border communities here. We only have slightly over half with a high school diploma, and about 1 out of 7 have a bachelor's degree. The unemployment level, while somewhere close to the national average, people are grossly underemployed and low wage. The real issue that I'm here to talk about is adults at or below the English literacy level of 1 is 47% of the adult population 25 and older. And what I mean by that is the ability to read a prescription bottle, to understand responses from a doctor, to fill out a basic job application, and to care for a second grader in school. So where is Laredo? First of all, down here by the Texas-Mexico border. It was about 39 degrees Celsius yesterday, so it's pretty hot down here. And if you look over here at the U.S.-Mexico border, we're talking about something approximately 300 meters or so across. This is a footbridge that can walk, so it's relatively easy to cross from the U.S. right here to Mexico. And with this bridge crossing, the North American Free Trade Agreement, pedestrian crossings have increased to some extent from 1990 to 2008, but when we start talking about commercial crossings, we've become important trade partners, crossing with air freight, rail car freight, lots of bridge revenue, which has led to a boom in Laredo. Therefore, there have been a lot of medical services that have been offered. With this population growth, Laredo has become very much a modern city with a lot of amenities and what many people would call quality health care in the sense of the typical American standard U.S. model. But we're still looking at the U.S. Over 20 million U.S.-Mexico border crossings are made annually for health care. And many of the 12 million-plus Mexican-born residents of the United States are among the poorest, least insured, and healthcare costs less, ranging from 50 to 80% less expensive for procedures, for prescriptions. Is it cost? The question is, are people really crossing because of just something as simple as cost, or could it be culture? We have a study, the head of 555 over 8 census tracts. This is representative quota sample of the population of Webb County. What I want to show you here is the reason why we're talking about Webb County being so important. Let's look at the population change. Webb County, approximately 50% population growth in 8 years. These blue areas mean that there's a significant population growth. And why is that important? Look to the right here first. In the U.S., about 1.5 births of non-Hispanic for every one death. In Texas, 7 births for every one death. And when we start looking at the United States as an issue, over eight births for every one death. So it's very clear to see the youth of Texas, they're actually a larger percentage of Hispanic under 5-year-olds than there are non-Hispanics. And that basically means that the population by the year 2040, the state of Texas is going to be predominantly Hispanic ethnicity. With these issues come some of the questions, obviously, education issues. If you look here in blue, slightly over 50% of Hispanics have less than high school education, less than 10% college. But when we start talking about projected change, as Dr. Steve Murdoch, former head of the U.S. Census, likes to point out, the issue of Texas becoming more Hispanic, this is not Texas. This is the future of the United States. This is the change projected U.S. population by race and Hispanic origin. 62% of the growth from 2000 to 2050 will be Hispanic. Therefore, we thought it was really important to see these factors. Why are they crossing? And if you don't mind, for the sake of time, I'm just going to go to the fourth model, the final model here. Is it an age variable? No, it's not about being young or old, crossing over to see a physician. Could it be a gender issue? No, it has nothing to do with sex of the respondent. How about being married? No, that's not statistically significant. How about having young children? Of course, when you're worried about your young children, you want to see a care provider? No, it's not there. But there's something here that pops up quite significant and quite interesting. Children ages of 6 to 18 in the household. We don't have a great explanation for that. We're not too confident that we know the exact answer to that. This is going to need further study. To some children start school. They need their immunization. They need more accountability and paperwork in care. One thing we've noticed is the education level. Those only having a high school diploma are much more likely to cross. As far as income variables, home ownership, how about a vehicle that would make it easier to cross? That is still not significantly related to whether people cross or not. Obviously, this is something that may not translate as clearly to folks in Canada. The U.S. in health insurance. The U.S. health insurance issues are quite complex. Those having public insurance or private insurance, or a combination of both types of insurance, are less likely to cross. So what we're saying is some people have what they call the safety valve phenomenon, where Mexico is seen as just a place to go when you lack health insurance. But to control for this, we looked at some cultural factors, and we found that it's not just the safety valve component. Those speaking English in their household are significantly less likely to cross for healthcare services. This is not about bilingual households. It's those speaking English. We thought about length of residence in years, and while it's statistically significant, it's not a strong effect size about length of residence and feeling of connectedness. There is some type of cultural impact that is related to crossing over for healthcare. We are still at a stage where it needs significantly more study, but we thought we'd present this in 8 minutes, and this is about what we have. I'll be glad to clarify any points or bring up other address any questions.
Well, thanks very much, John. That was great. And I don't know on your end if you could hear us, but you got quite a few laughs, I must say.
I didn't hear the laugh, but I did hear the applause.
Okay, good. Excellent. So if there are any questions for John and his team in Laredo, I would ask people to get a microphone, please. So if we have a microphone at the back or to come up to the front, do we have any questions or comments? Jan, yes? So Jan, okay, they're setting up the microphone at the back.
Hi, John.
Can you hear
you?
See
you sometime, and very interesting work that you've done. I'm just wondering if you could hazard to say that amongst those variables that you've shown there, that there's something called a neighborhood effect that's possibly enticing or contributing to the factor that this particular group is crossing and getting its services in Mexico.
I don't know if you're saying. My background is a community and urban sociologist. If you Google me, and I want it badly for it to be a very strong neighborhood effect. And the whole idea of socialization to the neighborhood, you became American or neighbor, and the effect size is just not as strong as I want. So I can't leave with the paper saying it's certainly this culture enculturation that takes place. We think there's something else there. Obviously, we're going to play with the data a little bit more to understand. I certainly hope it is, because I would love to write something for City and Community or one of the great urban journals, but right now it looks to be a policy journal and something along the lines of public health journals in teaching about the importance of enculturation and the importance of all the work that has been presented earlier today about cultural sensitivity going beyond just speaking the language.
Yeah.
Because what we have in Laredo is many, many people, many of the physicians speak Spanish, but they do not practice the same type of medicine as the Mexican physician.
Yeah, and then these are two themes that I think we've heard coming up through our own projects up here. One of them is, you know, the question of the importance to policy. We had a roundtable 2 days ago about that. We do have people from the Ministry of Health in the room right now, and one of our goals, of course, is for all this to eventually, you know, be relevant to policy. And we have representatives from local communities, local second language minority communities. So policy is a very important factor. And so are there any other questions for John? Yes, there was one. You'll have to go to the mic or he won't hear you. This is from the team at Bishop's University.
Hi there. Thank you for the presentation. I was just curious. Is this a bad thing? I mean, is it a bad thing that they're crossing the border and going to Mexico in the sense that they're getting the services they need, they're getting them at a cheaper price? It seems that they seem to be happier with them. I would imagine it's also taking some of the stress off the American healthcare system. So is this really a bad thing?
What I would tell you is the consensus of the people sitting around the table, if I take the liberty of speaking to the three of us, no, there are many lessons to be learned from the Mexican healthcare system of cheaper, more efficient. There are some efficiencies and things like that. So we would say not necessarily a bad thing, and that is why we need to study these crossings and just stop limiting to, oh, it's just to save a couple of bucks. There's a different type of care that is grossly understudied, and then from time to time it comes off as, you know, jingoistic of the U.S. model of physician care and this type of care and this testing.
Yeah, and that is another theme that comes up in our research also, is the fact that, and you alluded to that directly a little bit earlier, is that language competency is one thing, but cultural competency is another. And people need to, people sometimes look for more than just language competency, especially for really critical passages such as, you know, end-of-life care or emergency, acute emergency care.
Certainly. We want to catch some of the nuances. We are dying to start a qualitative study. Right now we're seeking funding to do a qualitative study to go into much more detail of these types of issues and find the reasons behind some of these quantitative findings.
Are there any other questions for John? We can take one last question and then we can have some closing words, perhaps. Anyone else have a question or comment? Okay, well, John, if you want to keep listening, maybe I can say a couple of things here to close out the proceedings before we give people time to go back to the posters and take their time and enjoy the conversation. I think to tie up pretty much all these presentations and to bring it back to something that the Laredo team also brings up, maybe I can say that health outcomes are important because they're one of the few true pillars of equality of opportunity, right? So access to healthcare, access to education, physical safety, equality before the law. You have there some of the main factors that generate equality of opportunity. I think an equitable society begins with equality of opportunity. Equality of outcomes, that's another issue. There are many factors that play into that. You can't control equality of outcomes very finely, but you can certainly do your best to ensure that there is some equality of opportunity. And healthcare is an important factor in their access to health. So any barriers to access to healthcare should be taken very seriously, and we should try to address them. Language is one of them. But as we heard all day, language is not the only one. And language is bound up with a bunch of other kinds of barriers. It's correlated with differences, as we heard from several of the presenters, including the Laredo team. It's correlated with differences in educational background, in socioeconomic status, in also spatial differences like neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. So these are very important things for us to consider as a society. And we have to ask ourselves, who do we want to be as a society and how do we get there? And one of the main things that we can do is ensure that everyone has access to healthcare. And I think all the researchers here are concerned with that, all the community groups present, all the practitioners present, and all the policymakers present share that goal. We may not agree sometimes on how to achieve that. As John was saying, different politicians on different sides of the aisle disagree about how to achieve this equality of opportunity, but we all agree that that's a goal worth pursuing. So through basic research, through applied research, we can actually get some answers about what does work and what doesn't work in terms of pursuing that goal. So we can have the arguments about how to we can have the arguments about how to reach those goals, but we can also do something about trying to answer the questions that those arguments bring up. And what we can do is do more research, reach some understandings, do basic research that informs applied research that then informs policy. I think that's the right order of things. And we can, you know, this is what we've been doing, and we want to continue doing it. And I thank you all for taking it so seriously and for providing what you provided today. And hopefully this will, you know, we continue this. We had interim results from some teams today. We had presentations of fond hopes from other teams who are just starting in their funding cycle. And by the end of this, we will have solid results from the basic research teams, some real results from the applied research teams, and we will put all those together into edited volumes, into a conference, into published articles. As John was debating, you know, should they be in research journals? Should they be in policy journals? Should they be reports to government agencies? There are many ways of reporting on this stuff, and all of them have their place. And we will make sure that we pursue all of them aggressively. So now I think it's time to have. This is my preaching for the day. I promise I'm done preaching. Now it's time to thank very warmly the people who made all this possible. So Melissa Bahamonde, that you've been all in touch with, certainly, and Mireille Marcel and her team. I think they deserve a huge round of applause for this. Yes, and a standing ovation, why not? So thank you very much for coming today, for presenting, for listening, for contributing, and we look forward to your contributions in the future. Go to the posters, ask questions. Oh, and Melissa has instructions for me about pictures and things, releases. Right, sign your release forms if you haven't signed it. No? Okay, pictures. So see Melissa about her instructions for pictures, because I'm not understanding them. So, will we have one question at the back? Yeah.
I think Andre also deserves a little bit of a round.
You know, I just work here. I'm just an archaeologist who stumbled into this. All right, thanks. So have a good rest of the day.